everyone, and welcome. This is Bobby Laporte, CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive marketplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. Our show guests are executives who have successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership. People who share their strategies for living and leading mindfully and gaining a competitive edge in the workplace. My special guest today is Dr. Krista Regadenz, who is the founder of Palo Alto Smart Therapy. Krista is a clinical psychologist who works with high achievers and other type A clients in private practice in Palo Alto. She is the founder and director of Palo Alto Smart Therapy. 17 years ago, Dr. Regadenz was a technology and strategy consultant at a data warehousing and business strategy firm based in Chicago and Boston, where she worked with knowledge management and strategy. She became a psychologist after a life-changing job burnout experience. Dr. Regadenz earned a PhD in clinical psychology from the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, where she learned a holistic, strength-based way of partnering with her clients in psychotherapy. Her academic research has focused on how people successfully recover from job burnout. Her clinical work is heavily informed by mindfulness, positive psychology, EMDR, sensory motor psychotherapy, existential humanistic psychology, interpersonal neurobiology, cognitive behavioral therapy, and Brené Brown's work focused on healing from shame and perfectionism. Today, she is the kind of action-oriented therapist that she tried to find 15 years ago. So, Krista, welcome again to the Executive Aid Station.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm glad to be here.
For the second time. So, for our listeners, this is our second episode with Krista. In our first episode, we covered a broad range of issues from, Krista, from your career transition to common issues you see in your clients to things like job burnout and anxiety. Today, we're going to focus on job burnout, more specifically, and also the idea of work-life balance, and we'll also learn a little bit more about your approach through your smart therapy practice. So let's start with job burnout, which is something I see so much of in my work with executives. How can you help us better understand some of the symptoms and the ways that people can approach this kind of situation where they experience job burnout? So let's start there.
Okay, sure. So last time when you and I talked, Bobby, we talked about that there are three symptoms of job burnout: exhaustion, depersonalization, or sometimes it's called cynicism, and inefficacy. And I learned about this diagnostic lens while I was doing my dissertation research, which focused on how people recover from job burnout. And this was inspired by my own experience with job burnout when I worked in technology consulting. So I took my academic research and my own professional experience, and in 2009 I crafted a practice in Palo Alto, California, where I use a specific combination of therapeutic modalities, and you talked about some of those, that I use to help type A folks and high achievers recover and also get better than they were before, after an experience of a lot of job stress and burnout for them. So it's out of this experience, all these things that came together for me, that I've got some high-level experiments to offer for those of you who want to do something about your job stress and the job stress that might be leading to burnout. So I'm going to offer some, since we talked about the symptoms last time, I'd like to offer some tips for how to work to alleviate some of that stress and how to get more towards this elusive idea of balance. So first, I've got a list, but it's not a hierarchical list. So
okay. It's
kind of the order is a little arbitrary. So first, I'd refer your listeners back to our last podcast where I talked about the importance of sleep and exercise and briefly talked about diaphragmatic breathing. And then we also had a conversation about creating awareness around anxiety, looking at tells and triggers for anxiety. And so that's where I send somebody first when they want to work on job burnout. It's kind of what we call the low-hanging fruit.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and then second, now this is going to be the new stuff, is so the importance of vacation. I mean, in the literature and from what I see in my practice, the importance of a vacation is there's something really special about that in regards to job stress and burnout, if you can do it in a way that can help you get the most out of it. So
right.
I'm going to talk about that first.
Okay.
So when you take time away from your job, you also want to see if you can take time away from the experience of pressure. So after taking the time off, that can be a really hard part. It can also be challenging to limit contact with work. The gold standard here is to remove yourself from even needing to check in with the office. And Bobby, I bet you have a lot of tips about how people can do that and systems they can set up for not checking in. Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. And but it goes back to, you know, what you're saying here is that you really have to have a different mindset.
Yeah.
If you're going on vacation, you really need to go on vacation. If you go on vacation and you don't at least partially unplug and you're consistently checking in or telling people you can call me, you know, you might be in a beautiful location, but so you might
right.
be physically removed from work, but you're not mentally and emotionally removed from work. And so it's almost, you know, not, I mean, it's just not very productive. But, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
I just try to ask people to take some small steps to be able to limit the actual connection that they're making to people, you know, back in the workplace.
Yeah,
but it's very challenging.
Part of that, yeah, absolutely. And part of that is being mindful about what kind of contact is bringing up anxiety, is creating the feeling
right.
of pressure. So, you know, some people can check email while they're on vacation, and that doesn't affect their physiology. You know, some people can't check news when they're on vacation. I try to limit that a lot when I'm on vacation because it sometimes can, especially these days, can make me feel like I have more pressure, and I want the antithesis of that. So
right.
you kind of have
right.
to know yourself with these suggestions. And I have processes that I take clients through to help them execute on whatever choices they want to make. If they've decided, I don't want to have any phone calls during my vacation from the office. How to do that when it's really hard to do that, when, you know, removing yourself doesn't feel like an option. So because that choice might be more about stuff that happened in the past than what's actually going on in the present moment.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what therapy helps with, is changing a person's reality and questioning what's really happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we've talked a little in the previous episode, and you're talking about this now again about awareness. So I'm wondering, so I like what you're saying about, you know, what are the kinds of things that bring up anxiety? I mean, if you're dealing with certain people on your team or in the workplace, or is it a certain project? I mean, if you're going to connect, you know, try not to make connections with the things that you know are going to create stress and anxiety for you. But at the same time, how often, I'm wondering, do you find with clients the idea, right, for people who are type A workaholics that they can't connect, that they have to totally, or at least that's the goal, to disconnect, to be able to create that space, to have the vacation. That produces anxiety about, well, what am I missing, and what are people doing, and what's going on without me?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you get people right? How do you get people to just, you know, realize? I mean, they have to look at that in a whole different way.
Well, it's a great question, and it's a highly, I mean, the answer to that is highly personal for each person. But the first step is to know what's going on. So it's kind of it's good to have the data when you feel the pressure. It can be good, especially when you've got somebody to partner with you so it doesn't feel so scary. It can be good to get a situation where you're under a lot of pressure and you're having an experience you don't want so that you can kind of say, oh, this is that. This is the thing I don't like. Okay, let me break this down into pieces.
Right.
And then the breaking down in pieces can get a little bit complicated, but that's what it looks like.
Okay.
Okay, first, what are the situations, like you're saying, you don't have to, you know, people when they come to me think that sometimes working with me means I'm going to help them quit their job. But that's not at all the outcome we're looking at. We're looking at the person feeling a different way, not removing themselves from the world. Now, sometimes people have to do that, but that's more about a choice than they're backed up into a corner.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about, so let's move on. So you had going down your list here of things that tips for people to think about, right, about dealing with job stress and burnout. So we've talked a little bit about the vacation, right?
Yeah, let me say a couple more things about vacation.
Okay.
Another thing that I see that people who, have a lot of energy and who are achievement-oriented sometimes do is when they go on vacation, they do it like it's their job. And so what I suggest is don't overplan or give yourself too many choices to make every day. So, whatever balance works for you. Maybe you do plan a lot so you don't have to have the pressure of making choices. Or maybe you don't plan a lot because following a plan makes you feel pressured. Whatever that is for you, just don't do it like it's a job. Spend some time getting bored. That can be really helpful, a huge gift. So float around in the ocean for nothing to do for a couple of hours, or play a couple of hours of Legos with a three-year-old. These activities can look like they're passive, but they allow a part of your brain to wake up.
Right.
So passivity isn't not the worst thing to have in your life when you're trying to get your physiology back in line to be able to have your mind concentrate and your body feel calm. Another thing that can be really helpful on vacation is to do something physical. So go on a ski vacation, go on a yoga retreat, stretch or swim or hike or bike or zip line, but get your body moving every day. So that's some of the vacation stuff that I think is important.
Got it. Good. I like that.
Yeah. So then Bobby, we hear a lot about unplugging, and I can already feel my type A clients rolling their eyes, but it can be really important. So whether it's for a day or a vacation or a weekend or part of a Wednesday afternoon, take a break from social media. You might even consider taking a break from all media for a while or all passive forms of stimulation. This can really help with anxiety, but the point is to really look at what helps you. So experiments
right.
in this are helpful. Another thing I think that can be really helpful is finding something completely unrelated to the work you do. Have some fun. So that can be taking part in an art class or going to a concert or playing a video game with a 7-year-old or creating a set of costumes for Burning Man. Whatever you find that sounds like fun, it's just important to mix it up. So if what you like to do isn't doing it for you anymore, then find something else to do. And in that vein, if you can use your body, that can be really helpful too. So when I say use your body, I mean do an activity where you can feel your body. So a lot of people who do sports could relate to this, but it doesn't have to be sports. It can be dance or yoga or playing
movement.
A musical instrument
yeah.
or martial arts. You can experiment with alternative ways of getting out of your car or in how you sit or stand, or you can even experiment with how you place your body when you go to the bathroom. I mean, it can be anything, but allow yourself to kind of be in the state where you're curious about your body and you can feel grateful for whatever ease that you can have. One experiment that I've been running for the last 6 months is I started jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I am having really a lot of fun doing that. And partly that is paying attention to my body and seeing how that feels to do things that are completely different. I've done Aikido before, but I never have done a wrestling-oriented martial art. That's been a lot of fun for me.
Why did you choose? I'm curious about, in terms of connecting with your body and moving. Why did you pick that particular discipline?
I picked that one because I had just gotten back from a mindfulness retreat, and I'd realized that I wasn't having enough fun. And my son has been in jiu-jitsu for a couple of years, and I went to pick him up, and I thought, oh my gosh, these kids are having a lot of fun. And for me, I like a lot of intensity. So it's probably one of the reasons why I work with the folks I work with. I don't like a lot of passivity. I like to really be met. And jiu-jitsu has a particular kind of physical and interpersonal intensity that it's just when you meet another person to spar on the mat, it's pretty special for me. So that's kind of how I decided to start that. Yeah.
And then
as I'm in it, I get to feel my own body's response, and then I flow with another person's movement. They pull me in, and I tense up in fear, and then I calm myself down, and just flowing with our movements together, it's kind of like a dance. I'm pretty into it. So, you know, when we talk about the body, an important thing, especially for achievement-oriented people, is to look at chronic pain, because sometimes the stress that many of us are good at managing can manifest itself in our body tension. And so if you've got chronic pain, a helpful thing to do is find somebody who can help you. And often this is part of my clients' emotional recovery. So I've got a team of people to whom I refer my clients to take their bodies back from that physical pain that's limiting them. So my suggestion is find your team of people to get you out of pain or to optimally manage it from the standpoint of if you can do it without medication, and that's can be huge.
That would be preferable, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So one more suggestion for experiments to manage stress from work and possible burnout is to find other people to share your life with and to actually spend time with them. So this could be in a traditional couple or a family setting, but it also could be with a group of friends or neighbors or with a volunteer organization. But get to know other people and let them know you. And again, this is an experiment. It can be really challenging for achievement-oriented folks, but a good action-oriented therapist can Sherpa you through that kind of interpersonal challenge if that's something you want to take on. But, you know, it's a worthy experiment. So above all, if folks incorporate any of these suggestions into their lives, if these suggestions don't help you to have internal experiences that you want and that you like, and for many of us in this group of achieving type A folks, that's going to mean a reduction in anxiety. Look, change up how you do the experiments or stop and do something else. Incorporate the suggestions slowly so that you can collect data about what works for you and what doesn't. So try one of these suggestions for a month, see how it works for you, and evaluate if it's worth your time or not. We're talking about a time investment, especially when you're experiencing job stress. It can feel like you don't have the time to spare, I know, but look, it's taking you years to get to the state you're in, and it probably is going to take a little time to make a shift. Look, we right. As type A's, we know how to work hard, and working hard is not the problem.
Right.
If you're achievement-oriented, you just need to know where to put your energy optimally. And experiments like these can help you get perspective on different levels. And what I'm saying here is flexibility and intention, attention and pain, attention to yourself is key in getting the results you want to reduce and recover from job stress and burnout. You don't know how to move beyond this point, but that doesn't mean you can't.
Right. I love the fact that you're proposing these as experiments. A number of ways. I just want to do a quick recap of the things that you suggested for people to try to begin to address job stress and anxiety. So we spoke quite a bit at the beginning about vacation time and different ways to approach that. You talked about unplugging, right, from social media or even all of media, doing something completely unrelated, to the work you do, something very different, using your body, moving, getting out there and doing something so you have some reconnection with your body. For people in chronic pain, which I guess could be a contributor to job stress and anxiety, or could also be a causal, right, effect, making sure that you're getting a professional to help you with that. And then the last thing you talked about was sharing your life with others. I mean, really looking, you know, outside of work and spending time with friends or family, and those social relationships can really bring perspective when you're, you know, when you're in, you know, in the middle of a very intense, challenging situation where there's a lot of stress around your job.
Absolutely.
So those are great. Very, very helpful. And I think, as you said, just pick one or two and try them and see, and then adjust and experiment. And if it doesn't work, then you can choose something else.
Yeah, it's just data.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like the different experiments and suggestions that you made, because it flows right into this next topic that I want to tackle with you, which is this whole area about work-life balance or mind-body balance. One of my personal philosophies is that work, while it's super, super important for high achievers and type A people, it is what makes everything else in your life possible. And if you don't have that perspective, then it's really going to be difficult for you to create value outside of work, so with yourself, family, and community, so creating value across all the domains of your life. If work is your life, then it's hard for you to achieve any sort of balance that people might be looking to do. So, and it's so important, as I said, to all the different aspects of our life. So why do you find it so hard to get people to think about this concept of balance? And what are a few things that you do with your clients that our listeners can start doing today to have a more harmonious life?
Good questions. So, first of all, I love the idea of balance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you, Bobby, it's a goal I focus a significant amount of intention toward. So balance is, and balance is a moving target. You know, it's because in the embodied human experience, we're currently in, the only constant is change. So we can get to an experience of balance by having a certain routine or like a recipe for it. And then the recipe becomes boring or our schedule changes and it's just not logistically feasible. So our professional and personal life is going great at one moment and then we meet someone who makes us feel more alive and that person's not our partner. Or we're feeling physically fit and enjoying taking on athletic challenges and we get injured. Or we never feel like we have it together and we feel overwhelmed and we don't even know where to start. So life is about meeting the challenges in front of us while knowing who we are and what's important to us. Then, even that's being constantly updated.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think about balance like surfing. I mean, when you're surfing, the first thing you want to know is if you're on the board or if you're next to it or if you're under it. And it's important to know where you are in relationship to the board. But if you're in the water, you're still surfing. So engaging in the act of balancing is something about, there's sometimes about knowing that we're out of whack. Sometimes we can get so attached to the desire to be balanced that we can miss that we're not on top of the board. So especially for type A folks like you and me and people we work with, being anywhere but on top of the board is labeled as bad. But it's all part of the same thing. And it can all be okay as long as we're mindful of where we are and what's happening and how we can take responsibility for the experience we're having. So this means being compassionate towards ourselves.
Right.
So in order to optimally take advantage of our learning potential, so being able to run those experiments and make new choices around how we act depending on the data we get, we need to be in an emotional window of tolerance. So if we consistently allow ourselves to be subsumed in a hyper-aroused state, like fight or flight or freeze state, or if we allow ourselves to be in a hypo-aroused state, which is like a dissociated, depressed state,
mm-hmm.
the part of our brains that is connected to intellectual functioning, like planning and learning and executing, it's just not online. So if we can know where we're at, it helps us. Oh, I'm in the middle I'm in the middle of freaking out right now. And you can then do things that help you get back to balance. Then you can learn faster from the situation. So another way I like to look at balance is to look at an experience of being on a seesaw. On one side is stress, and on the other side are resources to balance that stress. So depending on the amount of stress we're experiencing, we need to balance with resources. And those resources can be cognitive or emotional, somatic, spiritual, creative. There are many possibilities for resources. But optimally, for balance, we want those resources to be creative ones. So what that means is resources that we choose, not ones that are automatic survival resources that just get us through, but don't actually take us to a place where we're on the seesaw and we're feeling like, maybe I'm really stressed right now, but I know that I've got this somatic resource where I get myself grounded again, or I maybe distract myself for a minute to be able to concentrate again. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so another factor with balancing, especially for type A and higher achiever types, is their ability to delay gratification. Of course I'm generalizing, but I've seen enough of this pattern to call it out. So sometimes we can get out of balance because our idea of discipline keeps us focused on accomplishing and distracts us from the needs of our body or mind to refresh. So in order to be balanced, we all need to have downtime. I mean, that's one of the resources we can use on that stress resource seesaw. Downtime helps to keep us both within the emotional window of tolerance I talked about and helps us to be aware of when we've fallen off the board or off the seesaw and what that looks like for us. So a big indicator for me that somebody's out of this emotional window of tolerance is they can't think. They can't concentrate. Maybe they go into a meeting and they feel like they lose it a little bit. They're not really there because they're just not able to emotionally be there. No.
Right, and it goes back to, I think, what we talked about in the first part of this episode about some of the experiments that you can use to deal with job stress, right? And that is when you said something about in order to be balanced, you need to have downtime because you need to be able to know when you're out of balance.
Yeah.
And so some of those strategies that you suggested to help people connect with their body and take a break and unplug can help you to have a better sense of where you're at and to be more aware. And I love the analogy with surfing. I mean, I think it's very visual and it's perfect. You don't always have to be on the board. There's other elements to that activity that keep you in the activity, in the doing phase, right? Without it always having to be in perfect form on top of the board.
And you can learn a lot about surfing by being in the water. Not only can you watch other people, but you can learn about how your body moves, and it's just part of the experience.
Right. Yes, that's excellent. I love that. So we're coming up on the end of our time here, but I wanted to make sure we take a little time today, because we didn't have a chance to do this in our first episode, for you to help tell our audience a little bit more about Palo Alto Smart Therapy, right? Because your approach includes, as we talked about at the beginning, with the therapists that you work with, different cutting-edge fields in stress management and cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness, positive psychology, a number of different disciplines and modalities. So how is this different from what other therapists might practice? And tell us a little bit about the difference that you've seen that it's made for your clients.
Okay. So my goal in bringing together our team at Palo Alto Smart Therapy is to provide the community with people who could meet them intellectually and emotionally and help them accomplish their psychological goals. So the client's psychological goals, not the goals that the therapist has for them, which is pointless. I mean, you want to come to a therapist because you have stuff going on that you want to shift, not because the therapist looks at you and thinks there's something wrong. That's not helpful. So all of our therapists share a rare combination of intelligence and warmth that brings our clients an experience of being met, because we have a lot of intellectually gifted people that we work with, and we want to meet them on an emotional level. The emotional level sometimes is the level that these gifted people haven't worked as much on. Mm-hmm. So that's where we come in. So like I said last time we talked, there are many different kinds, different therapeutic methods and many different kinds of therapists. So at Palo Alto Smart Therapy, we have therapists who share an interest in positive, mindful, holistic psychotherapy methods who specialize individually in different modalities. So some specialize in EMDR, others in CBT or humanistic existential work, or sensory motor psychotherapy. That's a somatic form of psychotherapy. But our goal is to connect each potential client with the best therapist for their situation, for their goals, and for who they are as a person. And we're different because we have a goal-oriented approach. We see psychotherapy as helping people achieve their goals with whatever methods we need to use that's helpful. Because, see, virtually all of the research data looking into what helps clients most in therapy indicates that the strength of the working relationship between the client and therapist mm-hmm. that's the most important element in what makes therapy successful. So the most important factor in psychotherapy being a success is the quality of fit between a client and therapist. So what that means is how comfortable a client feels when they're sitting down with their therapist, and if the client feels the therapist can help them. And so we offer a phone consultation so that we can match potential clients with therapists so that match is right. So someone might talk to me and I'll say, oh, yeah, you're a person who is much more into looking at thoughts than you are into the somatic. So let's first have you talk to our CBT person. And if that's not the right combination, talk to me again, and we'll try to jigger it some more. But the importance for us is really the fit between right. the therapist and client.
And so, Krista, how can our audience – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sure. It's the importance of the fit between the therapist and the client, between the client's goals and the therapeutic
– approach, right.
Modalities that the modalities. Person has. Yeah, yeah. Versus yep. an idea that the therapist has about how the client should be.
Got it. So the fit is important, but it's really partly driven by, in the consultation, it's a discussion and a partnership that you're developing about how, you know, you can best, how the therapist can best help the client reach their goals.
Yeah.
That the goal-oriented philosophy for me makes, particularly for the type of clients that you and I work with, makes tremendous sense.
Yeah.
So how can people who are listening now get in touch with you?
Well, if they're interested in looking at our model, they can go to www.paloaltosmarttherapy.com, or they can call or text us at 650-422-2944, or send us an email. If they want to schedule a consultation, they can send an email to contact@paloaltosmarttherapy.com, or if they want to email me, I'm Krista, K-R-I-S-T-A, at paloaltosmarttherapy.com.
Great. Great. As always, very interesting and informative and helpful. Krista, thank you again. It's been such a pleasure having you on our show again today. I've really enjoyed
Thanks,
our
Bobby.
Conversation. Yeah, I mean, I think our readers, our listeners will benefit so much from what you've shared in the first episode and then also today. And I've really enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate your insights, and I hope that our listeners will also check out the previous episode that we did with you a few weeks ago. The feedback that I've had from our audience is that it was really been well received, very helpful. So thank you again for your time today.
My pleasure.
Thank you to our listeners. Thank you for joining us. That's it for today's show. Please visit our website, www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station, so stay tuned.